Welcome to the Coach Haas Podcast, powered by Sports Rehab PA, along with our sponsors.
By Optimizers Masszymes, 100% plant-based, naturally derived, best digestive enzyme blend out there right now. Highly concentrated with enzymes that digest proteins, starches, sugars, fibers, and fats. Helps to relieve indigestion, gas, bloating, and fatigue after meals. Take it with the meals to enhance the digestion and nutrient absorption. Also helps to improve recovery after hard exercise and hard efforts. So go to buyoptimizers.com and use code JUICY for 10% off.
Okay, welcome to another episode of the Coach Haas Podcast. Mike, we have a wonderful guest on. This is a dream opportunity here. I've known this gentleman a very, very long time. He's been a mentor of mine. He doesn't know that until now, but I've been following him since probably 2000, going to conferences, just getting my learn on. I put the shirt on today. I'm certified through the Certified Functional Strength and Conditioning. And this is just, I'm kind of blown away by the opportunity here. So I don't want to get starstruck with it, but you know, I want to introduce Coach Mike Boyle. So welcome to the show, Coach.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, this is really cool. I mean, so we've been constantly, first of all, I want to thank you because you're very receptive on Instagram. We've been talking for years here and there. Matter of fact, a side story, Carlos Wheeler, who is down here in Tampa with me, I found out that he ended up getting his equipment into your location, which was kind of funny because you're not a big tech guy. And Carlos's stuff is very sports technology driven. So I found that very interesting, but he says to say hello. So I told him that I was having you on. So
he's a good man. He was actually very cooperative because his eccentric pulley stuff is not super technical, and he was able to make some that, you know, I told him, I said, if it wasn't rack mounted, then we really wouldn't be able to use it. And he said, oh, I can make them rack mounted for you. So he did it, which allows us to continue to be the, I overuse the word functional, but we want a really functional space. We want a space that is multi-use. And I'd said to him, we don't have room for a bunch of K boxes or things like that. But if there was something that mounted to the rack, then that would be useful. So
I actually just got one of those myself. It's extremely portable. I can go anywhere with that. So that's a really awesome piece. Obviously Mike and I do a lot of talking about, you know, ACL rehab. I've asked you questions through Instagram and things like that on the side.
I'm letting my dog out just so you know. Of course, I have three dogs, and they came up and whining that he's going to go out as soon as I start doing this.
Awesome. No, this is genuine podcasting right here.
Real life.
Real life. Again, a lot of what Mike and I talk about is the ACL stuff. So we have some questions on that, but then also, you know, obviously the importance of strength training year round. But in your opinion, like, do you think high school athletes should be returning from ACL rehab between that 6 and 9 month mark?
It's funny, and I think you know this, but my son is just about at the 2 year mark now. And when you look at the data, and I did another podcast with some chiropractors last week, and one of the things that I said is I will probably use the studies to support what I want to support, and then I'll disagree with the studies when I think I don't agree. So I'm one of those guys who manipulate science to my benefit. But the data is pretty clear that the retail rate for people who come back in that 6 to 9 month category is higher than those who wait to the 9 month mark. So when you look at that, especially for a high school kid, and you think this isn't pro sports, there's no money on the line, you probably should be waiting to 9 months. With that said, I think my son came back to play hockey at about 8 months, and our surgeon is pretty comfortable with that because Hockey tends to be a much less ACL stressful kind of activity. My son actually played his whole junior season with his ACL torn, but then couldn't play lacrosse, went out to try to play lacrosse, and within a couple of days was like, okay, this isn't going to work.
Oh, wow.
So I think he was back around, like I said, I think about 8 months. But our guy, Pete Asnes, who's the head of orthopedics at Mass General, is becoming a real hard 9 month guy now with people in terms of, and honestly, it, and we'll talk about this, but most people at 6 months aren't even close to where you need them to be. Again, the overused functional word, but from a function standpoint, I'm amazed at the kids who get cleared. We get kids that are cleared all the time that I look at and think they're not even close to clear. They're nowhere near where I would feel comfortable with them being in a game. We were talking about this in our staff meeting last Tuesday, but the place we can really see it, the good thing for us, particularly if they're kids that have been with us, we don't have too many kids that have trained with us, but my son and one of his friends both tore their ACLs relatively close to each other and had surgery relatively close to each other. And we knew their, for instance, we knew their best fly 10 times. So we were able to know, again, functional testing, when they were able to run, I was thinking 90%, then they'd be pretty good. They both got back to 100%, but they didn't look good decelerating when they were at 100%.
It was like a Porsche with no brakes.
Yeah, it was a very like hoppy kind of stopping action where you thought, okay, this, we're not ready until, even though they can produce whatever, the power, the force, the speed, however we want to quantify that fly 10 time, even though they can produce that, they're not really adequately reducing it yet. And so that became another kind of return to play characteristic for us, is looking at real deceleration. People, I mean, because so much of the deceleration stuff I think is bullshit, because if you don't know that someone's running 100%, then there's no way to gauge deceleration anyway. So when you say, oh, we're going to do decel drills and we're going to try to stop in X number of steps, I don't know how valuable that is unless you know that someone is running 100%, or unless you know that someone is running at least 90. And I've gotten to be a little bit of a nudge about the numbers, because you don't realize when you look at, say, a fly 10. So let's just say my son's best fly 10 was like about a 1-1. Mm-hmm. So if we say 90% would be a 1-2, actually like a 1-2-1, and 1-2-1 is kind of slow relative to 1-1. If you've ever watched kids run fly 10s and looked and thought, on days that my son was running 1-2, he did not feel good and was running really, really slowly. Yet, if we went by the data, quote unquote, he would be at 90%. So there's just a lot of, I always talk about the idea of figures lie and liars figure. And I think you have to be really careful when you're doing too much of this. Oops, sorry. Let me get this dog back in. Big win. But it's it's one of those things where you have to, I think people throw numbers around, I guess, too much without really quantifying numbers. And one of the things, we actually did start doing some force plate testing with our ACLs, which I think does give you some value. You can really see right to left, but there's a lot of value in knowing that athlete's best vertical jump, and there's a lot of value in knowing that athlete's fly 10 time, because now you can really look at somebody and say, okay, like with my son, I know when you're going to be ready to play. Your vertical jump's going to be 29 inches and you're going to be able to run a 1-1. Right. If you can't do that, then you're not ready to play. And then that will transfer itself to some other plyometric type things. But I'm really down on the whole ACL rehab process, to be honest, in terms of, you know, the hop. I love the hop testing thing. To me, is the stupidest thing ever, because you take some kid who's never done the drill and then say, we're going to do this drill, and that's going to tell us whether you're ready to return to play or not. And the kid looks at you like, we're going to what?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, we're going to do something you've never done before. And then we're going to try to compare that right left. And that's going to tell us whether or not you're ready to play. And you think, that's so stupid. Why would anybody do that? But in PT, I think I've said this before, I think PT is going backwards, truthfully, in a lot of ways.
Yep.
So
yep.
We can get into that as
Well,
we
you
move.
know what? And well, it's going right into the next question about the return to play and what that should look like in your opinion. And you're saying that now with some of the numbers that they should be at and what they should be looking like. And clearly, when we're getting a lot of these kids at 6 to 9 months, I mean, they're just, I can't even believe that someone with a license has actually said that you're okay to go back to doing these things, or better yet, you know what? Head to the gym. And at this point, you're good to go. However you feel, just take it as is, and then you at sixteen.
It's pretty scary, truthfully. And then they get mad at me when I say things like I'm anti-leg extension or I'm anti-hop test. And I think you guys have no idea what you're doing. You watch some of these hop tests and you they're frightening. Like I've watched kids try to do it and it scares me. I actually told our they wanted me to see their physical therapist. And when they told me what they were going to do, I was like, well, he's not going there. I'm not doing that. I'm definitely not. I'm not going to say to him, three single leg hops as far as you can. That is not a plyometric exercise we have ever done with any athlete ever. Ever. And yet someone's saying, oh, that's a pretty good return to play criteria. And I'm thinking, a return to play criteria is a plyometric exercise that you've never attempted with your best athlete. And now you're going to do it with the idea that, hey, let's see if you can do it. Maybe you can do it on that leg. Maybe you can't. If you can't, then that's going to be a problem. That to me is so incredibly dumb. Now, if someone said, so with my son, as a for instance, he had been single leg hopping 18-inch hurdles. And I said to him, when you can do 5 18s in a row like you could do before with good solid ground contact, good solid mechanics, then you'll know you're ready. Because that was a plyometric exercise that we do. And that we've done on a regular basis. So I just think sometimes PT has so little kind of real interface to sports performance that they end up doing stuff that's just bad. And you look and think, wow, that's really bad. And that goes back to the leg extension thing. People, oh, you got to be able to isolate the quad. And I think if you're a physical therapist and you can't isolate somebody's quad in a closed chain exercise, you are a bad physical therapist. You do not need a leg extension machine. And I believe this in my heart of hearts that this is being driven by the machine companies again. Because the machine companies think, and you guys are young, but I remember Cybex and Orthotron and how much money people put into these things and how much effort was put into selling and marketing these things. And then I look at this and think, oh, we're here at Back to the Future. And we're in a situation where they're right back. Oh yeah, you need this. Oh, you need this. You need to isolate the quad. That's the key to the whole thing. And that's just, to me, not reality. I look at it and think we've rehabbed. Sorry, I have three dogs and one of them. I don't know how loud you can hear that, but no one has ever done a leg extension that I've ever rehabbed, or no one since the 80s, I would say. Maybe early 90s has ever done a leg extension. We've had a very, very, I can't think of anybody. Actually, I can't say that we had one re-tear last year. I was gonna say, I can't think of anybody that's had a re-tear, but we did have one ski racer who did have a re-tear. So I can't, we've never had them, but it's been very, very rare that we've had re-tears. And yet we have not, I mean, we don't own a leg extension machine. We haven't owned a leg extension machine since the 90s. We haven't owned a leg press since the 90s. And I feel like we do a really, really good job with our ACLs. And usually our ACL work is involved in cleaning up the mess that's being handed to us by conventional physical therapy. If that person, that kid comes in who's usually they show up, they're 6 months, they've still got patellofemoral pain. They've got crappy looking, well, you want to say quads, yeah, crappy looking legs. They don't look symmetrical. It doesn't appear to be the way that it is, the way that you would like it to be. And their functional, quote unquote, level is really, really low, but they've been in physical therapy for months. That's
Months.
our standard kid that we see almost invariably. And they're usually cleared. They're usually cleared to play.
I'll tell you what, Coach. The notes I wrote here and the questions, you're just like going right down the list. I don't even have to ask them. You're just covering them because that was the next thing I wanted to really ask you about was the leg extension. So you kind of covered that, but So what are some of your go-tos then for that quad activation?
You know, one of my favorites, and this actually, it's funny because I really like Mick Hughes's stuff, but Mick, he's an Australian, has suddenly become a leg extension guy when he wasn't a year ago, which I think is
Yeah.
interesting. And I do believe that down the road he'll come back because he'll realize. I think one of my favorite quad things, bike sprints, assault bike sprints. If you want to blow somebody's
Yeah.
boots off,
With BFR, Mike?
what?
With BFR on also?
Oh, well, we haven't done that, but I mean, if you just put them on the bike and say,
Yeah.
okay, let's do some 0.4s or some half miles, and they come off that thing and they look at you like my legs
Yeah.
feel like they're going to explode. I'm not a big finisher guy, but in my ACL kids, I love bike sprints at the end as a finisher because it's almost impossible to sprint on the bike and not get a really good quad pump. It's just the way that bike, the way the bike is built. So, but and then you get into things like just a well done split squat.
Yeah.
A lot of times
Yes.
we end up doing a lot of Spanish split squat because of the patellofemoral pain, because most of the time we're trying to get that kid through a patellofemoral issue. Because again, it's amazing how many people in rehab tell the kids things like, oh, it's gonna hurt. Your knee's gonna be sore. I look and think like my son, he got stupid for a while and didn't when because he did go to PT for a short period of time. He wasn't great about communicating with the PT. He did what they said. He did things that hurt, and he developed some patellofemoral pain that hung on for a while. And so we really had to get a little more creative. But that's kind of what we do end up doing with everybody's. But it was the point is it can happen to anybody. It can happen to my kid because kids think. Well, they said to do step ups and they said to do this and they said to do that. And I said, yeah, but did you tell them that it hurt? Well, no, not really, because they told me just do 3 sets of 10 and I can do it and it's fine. And it ended up being not exactly the way that I wanted it to be. And as again, I put some of that onus on him because he wasn't communicating, but that happens a lot. To me, I see it all the time in physical therapy where kids are doing things that they're probably, I guess they can do, but I don't know if they should do.
It's a good segue right into Dr. Mike, who is our PT.
I mean, this is awesome because what I find is that everyone who thinks the same way and on the same wavelength, you guys are all scattered. I mean, Mike, you're not around the corner from me, and Joe moved to Florida. We used to work right in the same building together, but these same thought processes, is really what we're trying to convey to the community. And this is how Joe and I linked up. I saw these deficits in the profession, and it's still fighting it. I had a 12-year-old girl I'm working with for an ACL tear who went to the local children's hospital here, and they do the testing, and the PT wanted to do the triple leg hop test, and she's still working on jumping and landing on one leg. So why would I propose her forward on the one leg 3 times when we're still working on that foundation? And the therapist was getting frustrated, and there's also things there too. She's 12, she's not doing a lot at home. So now we're getting her in here more. And the last time I did testing, we used some sensor technology to analyze the way the hips and knee move, this dorsiflexor system. She made a lot of progress once we just kind of dialed her in. But again, it's also hard. I mean, she's 12. Like, this is the last thing she wants to be doing. But the PT there was like hammering her down and like this fear factor stuff. And they're very stuck on the Biodex, the leg extension stuff, the isolated force you could produce here. And they're not looking at like what's causing these injuries and all these factors. So it's just nice to hear you say that too, that you're seeing these things.
Oh yeah, it drives me crazy. I was shocked when my son tore his ACL to realize that there'd been this big comeback of the leg extension and the Biodex and all. I was dumbfounded. I thought, wow, we finally got to functional rehab 20 years ago. And now the big push is towards non-functional rehab. And it's the typical pendular nature of what we do. But I was absolutely shocked. And I'm more shocked that people continue. I mean, they really are doubling down on this stuff and really fighting and almost offended it. It like people with me would be like, well, he's not a therapist. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's not reading the studies. And I look and think, I want to know who did the study. I want to know who funded it. I wanted to know why it was done. Because I remember, I mean, Cybex cooking the books in the early days in terms of they funded all their own research, and all the research said that you needed a Cybex and you needed this quad hamstring ratio. I look at people and think, quad hamstring ratio, these are things that they work. They went out 20 years ago, and I was happy to see them go, and suddenly they're back.
They're coming back.
Yeah, but and so much of it is driven, I believe, by the machine companies themselves. I really believe that.
You know, we get a lot of that. Anytime I'll post something on LinkedIn or something, people say, where's the research? And I'd say, I'd love to get research on it, but you need people to come in and commit to that. You need the standard. You need the equipment. Do you want to come in and provide the electrodes to see the muscle activation, see all that? Like, it's a lot. Sometimes you got to look at, like, what the result is. And what I'm saying is when you have an athlete on the field and they're doing these shapes and positions, how does sitting in a machine, extending your quad as hard as you can, translate into their ability to control their bodies? Like you said, split squat position. I mean, no one's ever taught these kids how to do a split squat before, you know? And you're right. Traditional PT is not doing it. They're doing the stretching. They're doing the bike. They go straight into a sled push and pull. They're doing ladder drills, but there's no prerequisites to get to there, you know? So I think this kind of segues into, you know, how do you, can you help explain why, like, the kind of that functional stuff is extremely important for sports performance? Cause I think that the kids, especially when you're doing a high school level athlete and a parent, like, why do we need to do this? We're doing like 3 hours, you know, a day on practice of soccer, field hockey, whatever, but you know, they don't understand why we need to take time to do these movements, you know, and they don't understand how it translates.
Well, my old thing, one, if you think about, I believe that the ACL, well, I believe ACLs are, they love to use the word multifactorial. And I agree that it is multifactorial. I think that there is a shoe issue. I think that there is a turf issue. And I firmly believe that if you are a shoe company or a turf company, you want no part of the responsibility for either of those things. But one thing that I do know is I never saw an ACL until I saw people start playing on turf. So I'm of that age where I saw the dawn of AstroTurf, and the dawn of AstroTurf seemed to also coincide with the dawn of the ACL surgery and the ACL repair. So it's hard to not look at that, at least to some degree, and say there seems to be some cause and effect. Because if you look at people like me in their 60s and say, did you know anybody in high school who tore their ACL? I would guarantee you that everybody in their 60s would say, no, I didn't know one person who tore an ACL.
Hey, coach, I didn't know
one person with knee surgery.
Yeah. So another piece to that, though, so you're talking about, we're starting to see it more in Europe, and in Europe, they're playing on grass. So what would be the explanation for some of that? Like, you look at the Arsenal female team, they just had 3 ACLs. They play on grass, and they're a professional team. Why do you think that it's happening so much at that level?
And that's why I think, so again, multifactorial. I think the training is poor, generally speaking. And when you start thinking about really, I don't think people do a good job. You talk about training the breaks. I would look at most groups and say, are they doing some sort of unilateral hopping and bounding progression where they're developing that ability to really truly decelerate? And my guess would be no, most of them aren't. And again, we were talking about this the other day in our staff meeting. You look at stuff like FIFA 11, like a lot of the stuff that people are doing from an ACL prevention standpoint are so kind of so basic that, and then you ask, okay, how many of these people are doing one leg squats? How many of them, like I look at it and think, if you can't do 10 one leg squats with, I'm going to say, in a, for a female, 30% of your body weight and external load, you're not strong enough. You do not have the appropriate braking system to be able to decelerate yourself. We did 5 years of professional women's soccer, or 4 years, I think, when they very first started the women's league in the United States. It was the Boston Breakers. We didn't have one ACL tear in 3 seasons.
Wow.
I worked with our, when I was with our Olympic team, I worked with our Olympic team in 2004. We didn't have one ACL tear during that year. We had probably half our team had an ACL tear, but we didn't have one. And we had a very, again, I use the word functional, unilateral based training program where everybody was doing one leg squat. Everybody was doing one leg straight leg deadlift. Everybody was doing a lot of versions of single leg hop and stick, single leg hop forward and stick, single leg hop. And we always talk about the idea, we hop medially and we hop laterally.
Yes.
Because when you're talking about hopping, the three major vectors will be anterior, lateral, 45, medial, 45. Most people don't do enough medial hopping, and that's the area. That's probably your big at-risk area. I'm hopping on one leg over an obstacle towards the midline.
Yeah, yeah.
And developing the ability to break there. So I would think, but again, and I would also look at it and think, sometimes it's just shit luck. My son did every one of those things. Still towards ACL. You're going to have some. I also think with the females, there is a clear female puberty does not benefit the female athlete, because the female going through puberty gains non-propulsive muscle mass. So a female is developing breasts, is developing wider hips. They're adding weight, but they're not doing the same thing that a male is doing in terms of they're not getting stronger. That there's not this big kind of testosterone production and increase in muscle mass. So you a lot of times get a female who's gotten heavier, but not stronger.
Yep.
That's, again, a bad equation. And I think that's why you start to see it more often. If you look at the female ACLs tend to happen after 13. So they tend to coincide in sort of that post-puberty. You don't see them in the younger age bracket. So, again, multifactorial. There is no simple answer. But, again, shoes. I think a lot of times we have the wrong shoes on the wrong surfaces. So you've got people, and I never even knew until my son got hurt. I started looking into blades and cleats and all terrain. And I was very surprised that there was not a lot of consensus. It wasn't easy. It's not easy to buy turf shoes. I'm doing some work with a women's lacrosse program, and I've been helping them. One of the things I'd recommended was that they all go into turfs, that no one's allowed.
No stud on the bottom.
Yeah. Because the other thing you see, and then it's also body position. Field hockey, very low incidence of ACL injuries, because you've got girls with really big quads who are running in a very low position with a lot of knee bend. Right. Soccer, lacrosse.
They're already in a decelerated position.
Right. Soccer and lacrosse, opposite.
Yep.
Very tall position, very, very limited knee bend. Those are where you're seeing, and even basketball, all of the sports that are kind of not existing in a great knee bend position will clearly be higher. Again, you think about turf, field hockey, primarily old school AstroTurf. Field hockey, wetting down their turf. And they wet their turf down, not because of the ACLs, but because of the ball. But I think that benefits my son last year. I made him play. He played all the way up until the playoffs in turfs. And he was so mad at me. But I just told him, I said, you're not wearing cleats. And he'd fall down at least once a game, and somebody would look at me, and I'd be like, I know, it's my fault he fell down. I get it. He's the only one out there in turf shoes. And in the playoffs, he finally was like, Dad, you know, we're playing for the state championship. Can I just put my cleats on? And I was like, yeah, you can put your cleats on now. I said, I've made my point that we're going to have. We want some skid.
Yeah. Yes.
I'd
rather see you slide than get stuck.
Exactly. No one tears their ACL sliding. So you know what I mean? I think there's just a lot of layers to the problem, but it's a layer. It's because, again, what happens to us, particularly in the US, I shouldn't say in the US, everywhere. No one wants to buy two or three pairs of shoes for their kid. No one wants to look and say, okay, if we're going to play indoor, then I'm going to get you a nice indoor soccer shoe. And if we're going to go outside and play kind of on old school AstroTurf or even on older turf that doesn't have as much fill in it, then I want you to be in turf shoes. And then if we're going to go out and play on grass, then we'll put you in a grass shoe. So what they do is they make an all-purpose cleat. And when you think it's supposed to be good for all three, that means it's good for none of them.
Right.
What it basically means is it's too stiff and too grabby for the first two and maybe not quite made for grass. So you'd end up in a situation where that's so, as I said, I think there's a lot of layers to the problem, but I think the biggest thing is just that the people doing rehab are not good at strength and conditioning, and rehab is strength and conditioning, particularly after week 16, no question. When you get past, you're past the 4-month mark, you should be with a strength and conditioning coach, not with a physical therapist anymore, because that's really what's going to get you from four to to 8 or 9 and ready to go. And
I just spoke with a girl and her mother yesterday, who's 16, and she's 6 months post-op. And I asked her, what is she doing in physical therapy? And she made it basically sound like the PT was just randomly picking things because they were not sure what else. I said, yeah, it's because they don't know how to program design
know
at
what to
that
do.
point. They have no idea. So they're just having you bounce around to make it look like you're busy. And then they send you home. And she said, oh my God, that's exactly what they did.
I mean, I can't believe when people, I ask what people do. Well, I do the treadmill and I do the bike and I do the stair climber and I do, and I'm like, really? Like, this, are we still doing this stuff? And then they're like, and I do leg press. There are still people doing, and this was, it was a while ago, but it was not that long ago. I had one of our best hockey players in the US, a female, who tore her ACL, and she brought me back her program from Mass General Hospital, and it was handwritten on a piece of paper. And it was leg extension, leg curl, leg press, calf raise.
Wow.
I actually sent it. I still have a picture of it on my computer. And I sent it to my orthopedic surgeon friend and said, this is embarrassingly bad. This girl, I said, this isn't some high school kid. And it would be embarrassingly bad for a high school kid. But I
Sure,
told her, I
sure.
said, if I gave one of my interns an assignment to write up an ACL rehab program and that's what I got, I would fail that intern. I would say, okay, that was terrible. And that's what I got from a physical therapist at one of the best, supposedly, maybe sometimes viewed as the best hospital. And again, it was a while ago. So it's not like it was last year, but it was still, I still am seeing some of these things that horrify me and
Mike,
consistently.
there's three things you touched on that I really like talking about. That single leg hop, because part of that sensor test that we use, it looks at that. It looks at the ability to jump in four direction. Immediately, I've noticed is where the disaster errors are. Pelvis all over the place, the knee valgus is all over, the ability to stick the landing or loss of balance is always lost. That's the highest metric I see with that medial jump. Not to mention their lack of confidence of when you actually do put them to jump on one leg and land on that same leg, the ipsilateral type jumps. And they're asking about when they could go back to the field and kick a ball and stuff like that. And I'm like, we're still working on jumping on one leg onto a 3-inch box. And we're doing forward and we're doing lateral, and medial. And it's tough. There's the mental block, there's the ability of not getting enough power up onto doing that. But then the other thing too about the female growth is, well, I have two 12-year-olds in here, a 12 and a 13-year-old. They look like they're 17. So you talk about, that's a great point you made about the female growth, like about adding that weight. And that's the type of stuff I try to talk to about the parents about, look, like they're growing, but now they have to try to fill into this frame. Like they shot up and now it's like a beanstalk. Now they got to fill out. And it's like, what are they doing to fill out that way? And then you got the guys that come in and like maybe 1 week, they're taller than they were last week. All of a sudden, they're like lopsided, they
Oh yeah.
change. And these trainers have them doing like, oh, he's big, so he's ready to deadlift. And they're just round back deadlifting, doing all this stuff we hear. And there's no buildup up to what those progressions, because you said the 4 month mark about the strength conditioning, that's when we do our first sensor test in here just to get a baseline. But really at that point is where I want them to at least have an understanding of the movements. And then that's where we try to add volume, resistance, high load with BFR on and see what they look like under fatigue. But I'm trying to get these kids, like, we have to get these movements down so we can start strengthening this. Like, if I'm spending weeks teaching you how to lunge, like, what's going on here? Like, we got to get this work in and do this so we get to the next step. Because otherwise, you're not going to be able to do these later stage things.
Right. And they just have to get strong at those things in terms of it. But it's so again, I feel like multifactorial is a big word or two big words, but it's reasonably descriptive of the problem or the series of problems that we're facing. But I don't look at that and think the solution to that is more machinery or more technology or more. I can't even begin, and I will become. I'm unpopular in lots of circles anyway, but I'll be getting less and less popular in the physical therapy world now that I'm starting to have opinions about physical therapy and ACL rehab and things like that. But yeah, it's a little distressing, truthfully.
Hey,
Well, I mean,
coach.
the re-tear rate is
Yeah.
twice as high as the original tear rate. So
Yeah.
what is that saying? Our ability to return people back is failing if the re-tear rate is twice as high because they're obviously not ready. So that's where, Joe and I put our heads together and we're like, something's wrong here. We're missing things. What can we do to try to fill these gaps,
And you said, and that's where you start looking at the silly return to play criteria in terms of, as I said, a triple hop or, I mean, I would want to look at that and think, okay, if someone said to me, return to play, I'd say, okay, have you worked through your plyometric progression?
Right.
Have you done a hop and stick? Have you done a hop and bounce? Have you done continuous hop? What level have you done that at? So again, I would, because of the height of the hurdles, I'd be looking at females and saying, okay, I need 5 continuous hops over 12 inch hurdles that look athletic. And that's a hard, like now that's quantifying. Well, what looks athletic? And I always go back to the old, I don't know if you remember the pornography in the Supreme Court decision where the guy said, they asked him about definition of pornography. He said, I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. And I
yeah,
think
that's true.
The same way with athleticism, when you look at somebody and you can say, okay, I always say athleticism is the difference between standing in the back of a pickup truck and throwing a basketball out and standing in the back of a pickup truck and throwing a bag of sand out. Said that's the difference in athleticism. If I throw a bag of sand out of the back of my pickup truck, it's like it sticks to the ground. If I throw a basketball out of the back of my pickup truck, it bounces and rebounds really nicely. That's athletic. That's what I'm looking for. When I see that, I'm pretty comfortable that, okay, this person now has the neuromuscular capability to do what I need them to do. And the same way, one leg squat, I can just look and say, okay, can you do one leg squats or can't you? It's a really simple kind of pass fail test. And then all you have to do is kind of quantify that and say, all right, what percentage of body weight am I comfortable with? I was saying, again, my son, I was lucky. I knew all his numbers. And I said, you got to be able to one leg squat 50% of your body weight. You got to be able to handle 80 pounds. So he's got a 40 pound neck collar on and a 40 pound sandbag. And he's doing one leg squats and I'm looking and thinking, okay,
right.
His leg strength is good. He's doing 5 continuous 18 inch hurdles, athletically looking nice, bouncy. Okay. His power, his reactivity is good. I'm comfortable with that kid going back. And then I guess the third one for me would be the deceleration in a sprint. I'm watching him sprint and he's able to decelerate and not kind of look, like he's trying to one sided or one legged. So.
Don't you think that comes with also, as a coach, just the ability to work with people and watch that movement and pick up on that? Because we're having a lot of run-ins now where everyone wants to be a performance coach now. Anybody makes an Instagram page, they're a performance coach, they work in these gyms, they're doing athletic development programs, and the parents are paying a lot of money, and these kids really don't know what they're looking at. Joe and I experienced that at a facility we were at previously, and we're like, we see 10 things going on here, and the kid's sitting there like, uh-huh. And there's a lot of factors that went into that, but we have a lot of these where the education now is, some kids see something on Instagram, like that looks cool, I'm gonna have somebody do something. That looks cool, I'm gonna have somebody do something. They don't know the progression. So obviously it goes hand in hand with like what you do, having an internship with the exposure, but just the importance of being able to just see people and understand movements. You can see that, like something just, it looks good. Like I can see like that looks very athletic versus, yeah, this, really looks bad here,
Yeah. And as I said, I just don't think they get enough of that in their clinicals. If you're going to go out and do orthopedic physical therapy, then you should be getting that in your clinicals and you're not. And that's why it's interesting. The most successful physical therapists that I've met were all people that came to me and said, I want to learn strength and conditioning. One woman ended up being director of sports medicine at Stanford. One guy is director of sports medicine for Oklahoma City Thunder. The other guy is director of sports medicine for the New Jersey Devils. But I haven't had very many physical therapist students or physical therapy students who've showed up and said, I really want to understand this. But the few that did absolutely positively excelled.
Yep, crushed it.
Because they learned strength and conditioning, and strength and conditioning becomes, if you want to be in that late stage rehab return to play space, then you've got to be really good at that.
Coach, these are like,
what is a strength coach?
These are like layups for me, because the next question was like, why would a strength coach benefit from the CFFC certification? Because Mike and I literally just had this conversation yesterday, because as the the clinic grows up there, he needs coaches to come in there. And we talked about other certifications, and my opinion was that some of these other ones are basically still book application. The CFFC is very practical, and if you have a coach that comes in there and understands that, they're going to be able to relate to a physical therapist much better.
No question. That was the design. So I designed CFSC. I initially really resisted doing it. A couple of the guys that work for us said we should have a certification course, and I thought I don't think we should get into that. I will admit right now that I was wrong, that actually has worked out really, really well for us. But I said, if we're going to do it, the number one thing that we need to do is we need to have a practical aspect to it. Like the old, and I don't even know if the NATA still does it, but when I was a certified athletic trainer, I'm not anymore. I finally let my cert lapse after whatever. I think I was certified for 40 years, but I just got tired of paying for CEUs and going through all the bullshit and getting suspended and having to go back. It was a pain in the ass for something that I wasn't using. But when I took the exam, you did what they called the oral practical exam. So you took the written, and then after the written was done, you went in a room with three examiners and you took a series of questions in front of those examiners. And it might've been, you know, tape an ankle, evaluate a shoulder, whatever it was, but you had to demonstrate that you could perform these skills that you had just said on paper that you could do. And that's what we did with CFSC. At the end of the course, which is entirely, the whole day is practical. You take the written before you come, and all you do the whole day is go through the practical, and you get to the point where you can, in fact, do the exercises, explain the exercises, explain progression and regression. Most of the questions involve around progression and regression. It might be, okay, explain a progression for split squat. Explain a regression from split squat, whatever it is. Those are the kind of questions that we ask. But we want to know that people can do the things that the paper says they can do. Because it's amazing how this was our big frustration. We'd go to a seminar and we'd see people who, oh, I'm a CSCS. And then we'd ask them to demonstrate something and they looked like a robot. And you thought, this is somebody who went and took a paper test and passed a paper test. Yeah. And now they're certified and now they think they can do this, yet they can't move. They can't effectively even demonstrate the exercises or the movements that they want somebody to be able to do. So that's really, I think, and particularly more so in physical therapy, because again, there's a broader range. I think in strength and conditioning coaching, there isn't as broad a range. You've got primarily ex-athletes, and generally speaking, they're hopefully going to be able to move. In physical therapy, I don't think you get necessarily always that. You may get some people who are not going to be great movers and not going to be great demonstrators and not going to be great teachers.
Yeah. I mean, that was what I had listed here, Mike. Dr. Mike, do you have anything else for Coach Boyle? That was freaking awesome.
Yeah, no, this is great. You know, this is why we do this podcast, Mike. Really appreciate you coming on. We try to gather really – everyone is kind of on this, trajectory of spearheading, you know, the change and trying to break this mold of what you see, this stale, stagnant, old stuff that's not working, and getting all the people together that want to kind of trailblaze and make a difference and help people out and do it the right way. And you start seeing, hearing the same patterns and the same things, eventually hoping people will take to the education. You know, it's going to be those that don't listen, but there's a lot that really appreciate this. You know, this is, I think, very powerful. We say this on every podcast for a parent, for a kid to listen to, hopefully some coaches opening up, or even, you know, some surgeons listen to what's going on, you know, what we're doing, and, you know, understand what's happening and understand that there's a difference between, there are some facilities that they're just doing stuff just to run through the mill, and then there's those that are really trying to make a change and do the right thing. So hearing your voice, you know, with your resume and your experience and stuff is awesome.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Coach Boyle, have a great weekend.
You guys too. Enjoy.
Take care. Thanks again.
All right.
Take care.